In this letter to Eisenhower, Ben-Gurion suggested that the Israeli objective in the 1956 undertaking was basically to achieve peace, whereas earlier the different objectives had been defined. And I believe that Abba Eban suggests that he gave some speech or some statement early in, well before Resolution 242, suggesting that territory should be exchanged for peace, that this was the right approach. And my question to you then, in coming back to where we were, is do you see a consistent strain in Israeli policy from 1956 on until now, maybe, aiming toward that objective of peace in exchange for territory?
Well, you have one proof, of course, the Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty, which is a complete restoral of all forces.
All right.
You have another evidence of this strain in the decision of the Israeli cabinet of, I think, of 15th or 16th of June 1967, which said, an internal decision, which said that we are ready to evacuate all the territory. Mind you, before 242.
That's my question right there. There was a cabinet decision.
Yes. We are ready to evacuate up to the international border with Egypt, with some alterations necessary for security. We are ready to withdraw to the international border with Syria, provided that the water supply, here you have the problem of the Jordan, is not affected or is guaranteed, and demilitarization, of course, of certain parts of the evacuated area. With regard to the West Bank, government will consider at a later stage how to proceed, because they had to accept that resolution because Begin was part of the government and he blocked this decision. Now, this decision of the government of Israel was communicated to us. I was in New York at the time, Eben was there, and we were directed to submit this as our peace terms to Dean Rusk, Foreign Secretary. And that was on the 21st of June, 1967. I would nearly say he gasped at our generosity. He didn't expect that, international boundaries and so on. And he took it up and they said, well, you can commit this, transmit that to the Arab states. He brought up question of Jerusalem, and he said this is the most an issue, the most delicate question, because of the religious involvement of three religions and so on. You must be very careful in proceeding into it. But he didn't go into the substance of what happened, should happen in Jerusalem and so on. So that was that. I mean, peace for all of Sinai, for all of Golan, in keeping open the question of the West Bank and so on, which was later discussed from 67 on with King Hussein. And our leadership made far-reaching concessions to him. He even called the mayor, said that he would get the decisive part of the West Bank would return to Jordan and so on. So even on that point, there was a willingness, a readiness to compromise. So that's still now the application, the Egyptian-Israel treaty. Now, one can say that Begin had in mind that he was trading the territories of Sinai for our holding on to the West Bank and to Gaza. This was the way of why he agreed to it. But if he really meant that, then he shouldn't have signed the Camp David framework. Because the Camp David framework does not bear that out at all. And he signed there the formulation which I never would have believed he would accept, that the recognition of the legitimate rights of the Palestinian people,
right,
and their just requirements. So this stands in the way of the policy of the present government, of course. Mm-hmm. It's one of the obstacles of Mr. Baker's endeavors.
Yeah. But going back then to 242, why don't you think that that was an...
Well, I say it this way. It's a simplification to just call it paragraph B. Because 242, first of all, insists on no use of war, no use of force. It says this twice.
Mm-hmm.
So the use of force, and if force is used, then of course you have the right under paragraph Article 51 of self-defense. If you're in the cause of self-defense, you occupy territory that is not acquisition of territory by war.
Right.
So therefore, this cancels this Latin American principle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Not only this, the operative part says that peace must be established, European peace, for all states in the area. And Mr. Kosygin made it clear when he supported the resolution on the 22nd, every state means Israel. He said that explicitly. So there must have peace, endurable peace. There must be safe, secure, and recognized boundaries. So you withdraw your forces where to recognize and secure boundaries. Then comes the freedom of them, of navigation, so on. This is a secondary question. And the settlement of the refugee problems. Refugee, not Palestinian. Palestine doesn't appear, the word doesn't appear. So, if one is strict on 242, one would even say the Palestinians have very indirect standing only as refugees and so far. But the situation has meanwhile developed and so on. And we have agreed, and this government says, well, we are ready for a peace settlement on the basis of Camp David. Well, Camp David has recognition of Palestinian rights. So that's the addition to 242. So when Israel forces under 242, it doesn't say the withdrawal of the forces of Israel from the territories occupied in the recent fighting, the recent conflict. It says of Israeli forces. Deliberately, we discussed this long hours. Of Israeli forces from occupied territories, from territories occupied. Okay. We did not stick to this principle on the Egyptian treaty, and therefore we established a precedent.
Mm.
Now, Mr. Begin made a very lame kind of explanation by saying, well, we have fulfilled our obligations under 242 by withdrawing from territories, which we did. And the United States is of a different opinion, that it refers to all the fronts along it, with Israel's neighbors. Now I say, it's a simplification just to call it territories for peace. I say it from our point of view, from my point of view. It is a resolution which says the liberation of the Palestinians from the shackles of occupation. It is a relief for Israel, the withdrawal, to devote itself to its true preoccupations, the integration of Aliyah, the preservation of its democratic values, its economic promotion, or in context of peace. So I give it a more political or whatever you want meaning. And therefore I don't like when one just says 242 is just this for this. In all that, 242 accepts the principle of an agreed settlement, a negotiated agreed settlement. So it makes it too easy to say it this way. Mm. And why do I explain it this way? Also for our people, to make it clear that it's not just to giving up of territory, it's gaining for Israel. Enormous gains. Its international standing, its support which it needs for mastering the task which is confronting.
So I judge from what you're saying that you feel considerable pride still that you participated in the achievement of this resolution, which you see as being in Israel's interest. 242.
Right. Look, on the 7th of August, the National Unity Government, 7th of August 1970, 70, split because Begin decided to leave the government, which is Likud parties. He decided to leave it because the ceasefire terminating the war of attrition, which was concluded on the 7th of August 1970, include the paragraph that the Yaring mission should be cranked up, should be renewed in for the implementation of Resolution 242. Thereupon Mr. Begin said, most nightmarish consequences would have, and the implementation of 242, because this is restored. And he said, we are resigning from the government. I was at this meeting of the cabinet, and when Mr. Begin got up, I said, Mr. Begin, you will hold on to 242 with your fingernails, because that's the only anchor we have. He looked at me wildly. I will never forget that with your fingernails you will hold on, you must support him, because that's what you need. Well, Mr. Begin signed a document to implement Resolution 242 in all its aspects and parts, if you remember, Camp David. Mm. Well, fine.
You mentioned the...
as a matter of fact, he remained very friendly, because he must have realized that after all... not that I was right, but anyhow.
You mentioned one other part of 242 just now, and that is the Yaring mission, because this 242 does provide for that, for a negotiator. What was your attitude toward that? at the time in accepting that part of the resolution?
Well, we accepted the Gagarin mission,
yeah,
who was regarded as a man to render good offices. We wouldn't recognize him as a mediator because of Begin's idiosyncrasies, and Begin would never say the word withdrawal until I said to accommodate him at this time, let's call it redeployment. Oh, he was happy about this redeployment of forces. When you redeploy them, he just couldn't. He had these, you know, he had these taboos, and so it was redeployment. Implementation by no means, because maybe he understood what it meant. So, no, I really say that 2 for 2 is a valuable concoction.
Now, this is a somewhat strange questioning, because now I want to go backwards again from 67 to 56. And we'll actually end there, and to the beginning of of the crisis in 56, because again you were in New York at that point, I believe. One of the things that has never been clear is the extent to which you and Mr. Eatman were kept informed or were at all conscious of the planning in Israel for military action and the eventual involvement of the French. Were you at all aware of this in New York as you carried on your duties there?
Yes, more or less, yes. I mean, I personally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, more or less, yes. Because, you know, the camouflage was made that we will be threatened by Iraqi entrance into
Jordan.
And therefore, if this happens, this kind of spell it on the dangerous situation. And well, it was in my province of competence in the Office of Middle Eastern Affairs to look a little bit into the situation, what would be the consequence with the British under these circumstances apply their defense treaty with Jordan. And I was sent down to Eilat to see the situation is there. There were British forces there on the Aqaba side, we're stationed there, about 200 tanks. So at the beginning, I took this seriously, but then I had my contact with my defense military friends, and I remember he was sitting on this couch, I think it was the same couch, one of the top military men, and I was discussing with him this. My experience in Eilat, and so he said, to me, forget it, Mazi, why are you so naive? This has nothing to do with Jordan. I mean, we are mustering our force in the south. That's this is the problem. We never heard about the Czech arms here. But Ben-Gurion, in meetings which we had at the time, as a matter of fact, our ambassador from Paris and London, they convened.
Mm-hmm.
He would not reveal what he was up to, and certainly not, he would not reveal that by the time when he was analyzing the political situation, the military situation, he would not say that at the time he was negotiating with Pino in Sèvres. He would keep this secret. He indicated to Ibrahim, I have told you, something rather vaguely that something may happen when on the eve of Ibrahim's return to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it has made a very deep impact, because even was sitting with Roundtree at the time and discussing a situation, the threat from Iraq and so on. And then while they were in the course of meeting, somebody brought in a note to Roundtree. Roundtree became extremely angry, and he said, well, there's no need to continue this discussion. Your forces have attacked Egypt, etc., etc. And more or less showed him the door. So even would have been convinced that this and this is going to happen on this and this day, I don't think that at that time he could have been found in Mr. Roundtree's room. And you will find a better shelter, the diplomat said. So therefore, he kept his cards very closely to himself. And things was very, very confused, because I was on my way to New York. And on my way to New York, I stopped over in Argentine for a friendly visit. And I arrived in New York on the 1st or 2nd of November, a little bit earlier. And on this day was already the question of the ceasefire was discussed. And I remember the squalling situation which I was asked to deal with when I arrived, that even had informed Hammerschild that Israel had accepted a ceasefire. The British representative who heard about that blew his top and said, how can you do this? Our forces are still involved in fighting, and this is not in conformity with the arrangements between our two countries. And we are deploying force in the Suez Canal because of the fighting, not because of the ceasefire. So Ewan was very embarrassed. So he asked me to go up to Hammerschild during my good relationship with him, and to tell him I have to withdraw this, we have to withdraw this statement, because there was an error in transmission. And you can imagine how Hammerschild accepted that. And therefore it is not valid, the statement. And
you actually told that to Hammerschild?
Yeah, error of transmission. So but another day or three to British for the British to blunder around there. And then they were the first to run away when you go home after my valiant intervention there. The error of transmission. You see, I use the word deliberately ambiguous, because an error of transmission could be that our cable was erroneously transmitted, or even made an error in transmission. But I didn't want to say an untruth, so I used the word was an error of transmission. In transmission.
But Eben didn't want to do that himself.
No. He was not very keen to face Hammerschild. Even is more keen to face 3,000 people and address them. It's easier for him.
Why was that? They did not match intellectually, is that? They're both very intellectual men.
Yes. Eben doesn't like angry dialogues. One-on-one, as we say now in America, yes, mm-hmm. One-on-one. He doesn't like that. he likes an anonymous audience. That's easier. Or an audience. Because his strength is his oratory. But anyhow, afterwards, in 67, after the resolution we adopted in 56, we had very stringent discussions between Hammerschmidt and ourselves, and but this was a team. I mean, he had his people there, and we were sitting on two sides of opposite table, and so it was tag for tag, and even in a certain way, knowing that Washington is running the show, showed to Hammerschmidt a certain disdain. I mean, he basically wanted to show him, look, what do you have to say? Why do you put up here such a stiff show when I can arrange these things in Washington, in a certain way? And Hammerschmidt didn't like that at all, and we had quite some, sometimes you were seen there. At a certain point, well, the mayor, who was foreign minister, she wanted to be in. She wasn't sure whether we were really holding the flag. And she came in and emotionally spoke about our situation in India. And Hammerschmidt got all wrecked in his favor. He couldn't restrain himself. But then he suddenly said, "Why are you so bitter, madam?" It's like a musical, I nearly would say. "Why are you so bitter, madam?" She never had heard such a thing. She was struck by it. And so she said, "Well, I am bitter because every step which I make, we make a mistake. We pay with the lives of our young people and soldiers, and after all what had happened to the Jewish people, our responsibility is to be so careful and not just go for general formulations, and we have to know where we go from here and so on." So we had strong discussion, but basically Eben was right. The matter was decided, our withdrawal and the conditions of our withdrawal from Sinai were decided in Washington.
Yes. And I have a specific question on that, because there was the withdrawal from not just the Sinai, but the controversial question of the Gaza Strip and Sharm el-Sheikh. And Pino indicates that actually he worked with Dulles, but in agreement with the Israelis, and that he was more or less authorized by Israel to make certain agreements with regard to the withdrawal, especially from Gaza.
Yes, that's right.
And that's your recollection?
Yes. Well, even can confirm that, because even was handling it in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
No, he acted, I mean, a little bit surprising to us, but we accepted his intervention, because we were withdrawing basically on the basis of an agreement, of a memorandum, aid memoir, between Dulles and Eben of the 12th of February, which laid down the points, conditions, in connection with, relating to Sharm el-Sheikh, relating to Gaza, freedom of navigation, and so on. But the fine points had still to be worked out in order to make it operative. And here, I think, in the last minute, Pino was helpful, because the agreement with Dulles consummated at two statements at the United Nations on the 1st of March 1957. One was by Foreign Minister Golda Meir, and the response was by Cabot Lodge. Now, I was in these discussions with Dulles when we finalized these two statements. And the situation was this. Dulles was very meticulously explicit on the Israeli statement, what we have to say. I said nearly he dictated every word. And he was sitting with his yellow legal pad at his desk and writing this. When it came to the Cabot Lodge companion piece, he was vague. And I remember I said to him, look, he has to flesh it out to me. And he said, now why don't you trust me? I mean, these are the principles which are agreed. And this was a snatch. So we returned that same evening after we had completed our discussion with Dr. Dulles, even with Mr. Dulles.